Hello, welcome to the 17th Macro and Volatility Podcast. My name is Michael Purvis of Talbach and Capital Advisors. We are a macro research firm for institutional investors. I'm here with my good friend, Josh Silva.
Hi, I'm Josh Silva, Passaic Partners, an asset management firm that focuses on the use of derivatives and options to create a better alternative solution. Today is January 29th, 2025. We were recording this 3 days after the AI announcement and on Fed Day, but before the Fed announcement. Frankly, Michael, there are so many things which are difficult to take clear views on. Obviously, the Trump policy uncertainty we discussed last time is one thing. But this week, we have a new thing to consider. What is the fate of the AI story? Sunday night's Deep Six announcement surprised me and pretty much everyone else. One thing people don't know about you is your experience advising telecom companies in the 90s. For perspective, can you talk about how CapEx worked back then and what assumptions were made and what mistakes that led to the NASDAQ collapse?
Thanks, Josh. And certainly this week, there are a lot of echoes of the late 1990s and early 2000s there. And, you know, there's questions here. Will NVIDIA see the massive and enduring PE compression that Cisco experienced following 2000? Or will this just be a blip and distraction of the established AI narrative? But Josh, let's go back in time to the early and mid-1990s. And you had back then, it was just, you know, a little bit of history here. You had a pretty amazing concurrence of five key drivers of change in the telecom and technology sector. But first of all, you had deregulation of existing monopoly providers such as AT&T or Verizon. Second, you had the inception of development of the internet. Third, the inception of mobile communications. Four, the development and commercialization of satellite telephony and data networks. And finally, you had privatizations of international telcos and the increased globalization of telecom. All of these trends were happening concurrently, and the technology to facilitate high bandwidth data and cellular networks was accelerating quickly. It was an age of excitement and chaos, and it rhymes to a degree with what we've seen unfolding with AI over the last couple of years. I'll start with one striking similarity, is that in this sort of telecom tech frenzy of the 1990s, we had what I am sort of terming CEO FOMO, or CEO fear of missing out. And what is that? Obviously, you and I know what that means in the stock market sense, but in the corporate sense, what I'm referring to is that it was a sort of a CEO's fear that their company would miss out in the future, fall behind a rapidly changing landscape. And like today's tech AI situation, we also have a sense of CEO FOMO. There have been aggressive bets made with a sense of what Cynic might describe as a herd mentality. So as with stock market FOMO, this CEO FOMO can lead to tears when the trends turn. And I think that's one of the questions that has sort of turned up this week and across markets. And certainly we know tears were shed after the tech bubble burst in 2001. And within the telecom sense, both by the carriers and the equipment makers which sold the picks and shovels.
So Michael, that's a great introduction. I think this comparison is really timely. There are similarities due to the massive infrastructure build, but there are also a lot of big differences. Can you elaborate more?
So Josh, the way I think about it is I would break down this into four broad categories in which we can contrast and compare then versus now. So I'm going to start with the strategic setup. Second, the financial profile of the companies then versus today. Three, the catalyst for the bursting of the bubble. And finally, the stock market valuations then and now.
That's great, Michael. Walk us through some of these. Walk us through all of these, actually.
So, okay, let's start with a strategic setup. And I think just a little bit of history here. In the 1990s telecom boom, you had giant regulated monopolies, which were undergoing a huge transition and deregulation. This started in 1982 with the breakup of AT&T, which was pretty much the telecom carrier. And it broke into long distance and then local carriers, such as Verizon, as we know it today. Then in 1996, we had another important form of deregulation in the Telecom Act of 1996, which was designed to promote competition across a landscape. And that's between local and long distance companies and also the cable players, which were becoming increasingly prominent. And then, you know, as we mentioned, on top of this, we had the advent of wireless, we had the advent of internet, and then satellite as well. So finally, you had large scale privatizations of state-owned telecom companies around the world and an increased deal increased global deal making. But what's important here is that while you had all these incredible and concurrent drivers, is that the large companies were extremely legacy regulated monopolies working alongside extremely entrepreneurial companies. It was really an incredible contrast in corporate culture. And I think this is really different than today's condition, where today you have established players in AI, but they're not regulated monopolies. These are giant tech companies which are extraordinarily good at sort of figuring out and capitalizing upon technology and kind of defining the future there. So a lot of these companies, be they Meta, be they Google, be they Microsoft, be they NVIDIA, they've just been super growth oriented since their inception. So there's a huge cultural difference here. But and this also sort of dovetails right into category two, which is the financial profile of the companies that we're talking about today versus back then. And again, this is a little bit more on the carrier side than on the equipment side, but it's all ultimately connected. So back in the 1990s, you know, there was this sort of frantic creation of new networks, be they wireless networks or CLECs, competitive local companies, or long-haul fiber companies. And these companies, a lot of them very entrepreneurial, but they're also using a lot of high-yield debt. So there's a lot of capital raised in the high-yield markets. And much of this was used to buy the equipment, often from the likes of Lucent or Nortel or Cisco. So this is a big point of distinction, because today so many of the large customers that we're talking about are companies like Microsoft, which of course have extraordinarily strong balance sheets there.
Okay, Michael, so why is this so important?
Well, Josh, it's important because if you go back to the value creation on the growth side of this equation back in the 1990s, so much of the value shareholder value creation really came through hoping a large legacy monopoly like Verizon or AT&T was going to buy you for some very high price. And ultimately what happened is that for many of these companies, it was binary. You either got bought out or you went bust. Very few of them survived as independent firms. So contrast that today, you know, for companies like Vertiv or Constellation Energy, you've seen their stock prices rise with this AI boom. The bare argument here is that we'll see their order books decline dramatically if DeepSeek really is the game changer that some people think it's going to be. But these companies are not going out of business here, and I think that's an important distinction. Another thing is that, what was going on then was so many of the equipment makers were doing vendor financing for their customers because they simply didn't have enough capital to buy all this stuff. So this was another form of leverage. And it was ultimately not just bad for the companies getting the vendor financing, but for the vendors themselves.
All right. So how did the bubble burst in the 1990s?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, ultimately, what pierced the telecom tech bubble was that final demand for these products and services was simply way overinflated. The expectations were simply not realized. There was, of course, a lot of other factors which contributed to the demise of the tech telecom bubble. There were scandals like we had at WorldCom, and just a lot of very, you know, frankly, poorly conceived business plans. But the question that DeepSeek raises, and whether this will resemble a 2001 type collapse, is that it's a very different type of risk. It's ultimately the cost structure for AI going to be dramatically different than the current regime expectations would suggest that it was. So in the 1990s, it wasn't like there was some new technology that was somehow making all the existing telecom infrastructure obsolete. It was just It was just simply that there was extraordinarily high expectations and ultimately not enough follow-through on that.
Right, and that leads me to my next question. Michael, and then pulling this conversation back to today's market, what are the broader risks and sector risks today, and what were they in 1999?
So there's a key difference in valuations, and I think that is really central to this discussion as to how we have to be worried about the broader market. So today, the centerpiece of the AI boom has really been NVIDIA, which saw an immediate translation of these exciting narratives into actual earnings here. Much of the 1990s narrative hinged on this: we're building the future, trust us, the earnings will follow. And amidst that, Cisco traded north of 200 times forward earnings in mid-2000, and that really set up this massive valuation collapse. NVIDIA today, now granted this is after it got beaten up this week, is trading at 41 times forward. It's traded as high as 60 over the last couple of years. But importantly, NVIDIA did grow into that 60 really fast thanks to massive earnings growth well above estimates. So on the AI provider side, for example, sorry, not the AI provider side, but the people that are really buying these chips, let's say that they're announced $80 billion of AI CapEx in the case of Microsoft is grossly overstated because of DeepSeek's potential disintermediation. What happens? Well, maybe that's a giant write-off. Maybe it's a $40 billion write-off. And no question, that is a big hit to Microsoft's balance sheet and its credibility. But Microsoft will be able to sustain that. Microsoft is also trading at 31 times forward earnings. That's a 50% premium to the S&P, but it's not absolutely dramatic. Josh, let's also remember that it was just a couple of years ago that Meta promised this metaverse a hugely expensive $10 million journey into something with very questionable end user demand. It hit the stock, and then Meta abandoned that strategy and has rebuilt itself. So all this said, if DeepSeek pushes down the PE for NVIDIA, it will be felt across the sector, absolutely, and by extension across the market to some degree. NVIDIA has been the pillar of the tech rally, and the tech rally has been the pillar of the broader rally. But if this PE compressions, I think it raises questions about it really puts the burden on the rotation trade to really kind of do the heavy lifting from here on. So, Josh, enough from me. You were trading telecom and tech firms back in the 1990s and early 2000s. What lessons and comparisons do you see?
Well, the big question is, are we seeing a change in the investment thesis of AI or not? To me, this is less about what is being done by Deep Six, but more about positioning and expensive stocks. Position is very much overweight the AI story. Monday showed us that. A company losing more than $500 billion says a lot about positioning in the markets. Companies not only have benefited from CapEx spending like NVIDIA has, but also companies who have made CapEx spendings have benefited. See Meta. You could also say big cap tech may start losing its monopoly as AI gets more democratized. And that is an interesting story. AI power, though, to me, is the closest to what can go wrong. Seeing utility stocks moving like the Nasdaq was interesting. Utilities used to be the least volatile and most defensive stocks in the market. So this AI story has holes, and I'm not saying it does. But if it isn't so clear, investing gets a lot harder and trading gets a lot harder. This leads back to a higher VIX for longer. One trading note from the late 90s, there wasn't a call people didn't like buying. Back then, trading was easy. We're all buying or all call buying worked in all stocks linked to a market theme. I also remember market makers made a ton of money based on all this trading. Last year, we saw the same thing. Why is that important? Well, it shows how easy investing was and also how easy trading was. Last year showed a similar pattern. That leads me again, things are about to get a lot harder in markets.
Well, Josh, it's a very interesting time for sure. And I think there's a lot of analogies here. I just don't think they're clear-cut, direct, cut-and-paste type lessons. A lot to be, a lot in common, a lot of differences. So that's it for today. Again, this is Michael Purvis at Tallbach and Capital Advisors. You can find me on LinkedIn or as well as on Bloomberg. Thanks very much.
And this is Josh Silva, Passaic Partners. You can find me on Bloomberg, the website, www.passaicpartners.com, or the Passaic Partners LinkedIn page. Be well, and until next time.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not investment advice. The information, opinions, and views expressed on this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended as investment advice. The opinions expressed may not align with Passaic Partners' views or its client strategies. Market forecasts are speculative and should not be the sole basis for investment decisions. Consult your financial and tax advisors before making any investments.